Kara, I can.
Brad Bird, VeriSign.
Dwayne Wessels, VeriSign.
Fred Baker, ISC.
Ryan Stevenson, DOD.
Russ Mundy, ESSEC liaison to the RSAC.
Alejandro Costa, liaison for the NOMCON, also RSAC caucus. I work for LACNIC.
Wes Hertiger, University of Southern California, ISI.
Lars Johan Liman, NetNode.
Hans Petter Holen, associate chair. That means I was last chair in NOMCOM and just give advice this year.
Hi, Zai Jamil, chair this year of the NOMCOM.
Damon Ashcraft, chair elect of the NOMCOM.
Daniel Migo, liaison, IAB liaison to RSAC.
Andrew McConaughey, ICANN staff supporting the RSAC.
Maury Alleman, ICANN staff.
Kaveh Rangeberg, RIPNCC.
Also, we've got a few RSAC members online. I'd just like to introduce them to you. There's Kevin Jones, who's online, as well as, I don't think Howard is dialed in. He was dialed in earlier. And we have, this is an open meeting, so we have other attendees as well online and in the back of the room. Yes, there are empty seats, so please feel free to move up to the tables if you'd like. With that said, I'd like to turn it over to you.
Thank you very much. We're going to make it really snappy and short because I think there may be stuff we want to discuss about which is more substantive with the RSAC as well. You've been hearing stuff in the community. So let me just do a quick presentation. Basically, you know what the NOMCOM is. We're not going to waste your time. Just know that there are three board positions open. Anybody can apply. We would encourage you to suggest people to us so we can reach out to them or just have them apply straight to the NOMCOM. There are three board positions open this year. For three-year terms. That means there's a lot of spaces we need to fill this year on the board. The GNSO, one seat is open. Doesn't mean you have to be affiliated, representing, recommended by the GNSO, because there's this misunderstanding in the public. Anybody could be sort of appointed by the NOMCOM to the GNSO for that one seat for two-year term. It's a non-voting position. Then you have the ALAC. There are geographical restrictions in this one. This is the only one which has geographic limitations this year. There's one seat for Europe, one seat for North America, so that means you have to either be a European or a North American to qualify one of those seats. Again, you don't have to belong to the ALAC, you don't have to have any affiliation with the ALAC, no one has to approve you, just apply, and it'll be up to us to decide to fill those two seats. And the last is the CCNSO. So again, it's important that you are not a CCTLD manager here. I think this is something we've learned from last year's experience. The CCNSO does not want us to appoint anybody to that seat who is involved in, affiliated with, or related to a CCTLD management role. So it has to be somebody else. They're looking for diversity, and that's what they want. They don't want that to be a second seat for other people to use as a backdoor. So that's the four different sort of areas we're trying to cover. As you can see, we have three, which is a lot as far as board seats are concerned. So if you know folks in the RSAC community or otherwise who could be great to apply, we would encourage you to either send their names or get them to apply directly. And it's really important that we see a lot more women applicants, qualified women applicants, and for folks from the Latin American community. At the moment, we're seeing sort of a low turnout of applications. It has sort of risen because of the great work that Alejandro has done over the last 2 days, by the way, specifically. He's an excellent NOMCOM member, I must say. You're very well represented in the NOMCOM because of Alejandro. And if it hadn't been for him, the uptake on the LAC representatives would not, or applicants wouldn't have taken place. So as you can see, we had last year 36% women as opposed to in the previous year of 19, and 50% of the candidates selected were women last year as opposed to 29% the previous year. We're trying to do better. To give you an example, there were two board seats last year, and both board seats were women. So that gives you an idea what that doesn't mean that we're just trying to point people just because they're women or they're from, they have a diversity criteria. No, they were qualified. That's what made a difference. So seeing more qualified applicants who are either women or from developing countries would be really good. I wanted to quickly just give you where to apply. We now have, for the first time, I called it the nomads. We were nomads. We never had a fixed website. It was always NOMCOM 2017, 2018. So the SEO searches on Google were just really bad. We now have nomcom.icann.org, and if you go to that website, you will find the expression of interest, but you need to fill it up. You need to fill that expression of interest by the 19th of March, which gives you very limited time right now. And then you have till the 26th of March, basically, to be able to complete your application. I'm sorry, that's a typo. I apologize. We'll have to fix that, Charla. It says 2017. We didn't spot that earlier. Now, if you could travel back in time, that would be great. Yeah. So basically, 26 March is the. But you got to get in and get your expression of interest and the access to the application by the 19th. So we're encouraging you to do that. There's some talk about extending the deadline by a few days. We're not there yet. We haven't made that decision yet. But I think just treat 19th of March as your deadline, suggesting people, getting them to come into the system. Thank you. Let me just go in and talk about improvements that have taken place this year, and Alejandro will maybe give you more insight when you do the full RSAC meeting. We said we had great responsibility but no power in the NOMCOM with our own operations. Our destiny was predetermined before our birth. I'll explain what that means. And we had a Groundhog Day situation where every year we had the same problem again and again, and doesn't matter how much you try to fix it, it couldn't get fixed. Because by the time we were seated, we were told that 11 months in advance, our budget had been hard-coded by the staff. We had nothing to do with it. And basically, our operations and everything we needed to do that year were already sort of predetermined. So we were in this situation where we couldn't make decisions. This year, we fought hard and changed it. So our recruitment firm, our budget, our assessment firm, schedule, meetings, operational planning used to be predetermined. And this year, what we've done is we've taken decisions right on the first day. So we did a lot of pre-planning. And on the first day that we came into existence, we started making decisions, and we had this decision go to staff. And it took a long time to get it through, but we forced a partial budget reveal. We don't know what our budget was. And in that budget, we found space to make many of the decisions we've taken this year, and we'll go through them in a second. So we now have a second recruitment firm. We don't just use one recruitment firm as we have done in past years. We have a second one, thanks to staff and their understanding of why that was required. And in coming years, moving on, we will have more, a pool of recruitment firms from which Damon, of course, as chair-elect, will be able to choose. We've changed our assessment firm this year. They were also something that used to be 5 years. We've had the same ones. And this is important. We've actually decided that instead of having SurveyMonkey to be used to select board candidates, we're gonna actually meet face-to-face, discuss candidates, every single candidate, and decide whether that's a good candidate or not. Previously, the process used to be that, you know, people had a polling online. You used to sit at home and click numbers and say, oh, this person's 4, this person's 5, this person's a 1. And that was sort of put together. And based on that, there was a cutoff. And people who didn't get those numbers or high numbers really didn't make it through the process. And we think that in order to improve this, we need to make sure that we meet face-to-face and consider every applicant, regardless of how they may have been rated. So that's why the face-to-face intersessional is happening. Just so you know, that is not new money. That is not additional money. We've had to make serious sacrifices within our existing budget. That's why we needed the budget numbers to then basically use that for our face-to-face intersessional. We have, for the first time, a job description. So we asked the experts, which are the board members themselves, and said, look, this is what we're describing you as. Is this right? They looked at it. They vetted it. I said, yes, that's right. This is the amount of time committed is going to take. So that's the first. We are going to have criteria this time set in before we get the application, so we're not going to look at people and say, I like this person. Well, there's criteria. There's going to be. We don't have a matrix yet, but we have criteria against which we're going to match folks. We work really hard over that on that for the last few months. We have a quality and skills document, and there's board guidance, basically, that we receive from the board about what they're looking for. And that's not binding, but the board basically tells us this is what they're looking for. We do pay heed to what they are asking for. SurveyMonkey versus deliberations, I explained this. So we're going to take time to know each and every single candidate. Everybody who applies is going to actually be considered by this NOMCOM. We're not just going to cut you off because your numbers weren't good enough. As you can see, we're doubling the recruitment capacity. We have two firms, and in the long term, there are RFPs this year being put out for pool of recruitment and assessment firms. So we're going to be broadening our network, which has been one of the biggest criticisms we've received, that you use the same network, you get the same people, you don't really get a diversity. And this is one thing we've heard a lot in the community, that NOMCOM is a black box. Once you know apply, nobody knows what's going on. You don't come back and tell the candidates where they are, what stage they're at. We're changing that this year in a big way. We are going to, at every single stage, when somebody doesn't make through, they're going to get a communication from the NOMCOM telling them which stage they were able to get through or not, and asking them to reapply. And I've made a personal commitment this year that folks who get into an advanced stage, they will get a personal call from the chair to explain to them what happened, to the extent that we can reveal it and encourage them to apply again. Because if you got to an advanced stage, that means you were a really good candidate, and you should apply in the next cycle, given the fact that you were well-perceived by folks in the process. So that's something we're going to do. We're going to try to be better to, our customers. We want to get to know our customers and what they need. So people we're going to appoint to, we want to get to understand what they are. So I'll give you a simple example. Someone in the CCNSO may not have a very good understanding what the GNSO is like and what their political situation is like, and vice versa. The GNSO may not understand the political issues related to the CCNSO, but they're appointing people in these positions. So they need to get to know one another. And so we have training. Thanks to Damon here, who did a lot of this confidentiality training and training on each ACNSOs, and I did some on board governance, and we had some more on interview training done actually yesterday to teach us how to do interviews. So we're not experts at taking interviews. We had a process where basically once we made our final decisions, we then used to send that final decision list to ICANN for due diligence. And we would sometimes have a situation that happened last year where suddenly the due diligence guy said, we got a problem. Someone you selected didn't make it through. And then we didn't have time, space, money, or meeting. People just weren't interested in meeting to actually change that decision. So that was a problem. So we're fixing it this year. We're going to do due diligence of those people who come to Panama for the final interviews prior to them being interviewed and being selected. So in Panama, once we made a decision, it's done. We don't have to send them to due diligence. So we're trying to improve that process. Oh, as you know, we were going to get a permanent website, and we actually asked every single ACSO that we appoint to, could you please tell us what you need from us? What are you looking for? So the board does it every year. They send us a letter, but we've asked the GNSO, we've asked the ALAC, we've asked others in the CCNSO, please send us a letter, and they have. We're still waiting for the GNSO letter, though, to tell us exactly what they're looking for. Now, again, this is not binding on us, but it helps us understand our customers and how we're going to be appointing folks to them. The last thing we've changed, I think this is important for you, is that we're trying to be law-abiding. In the bylaws, non-voting liaisons are non-voting liaisons. They're also termed unlimited. They can come as many times as they want to the NOMCOM. So we are, and I'll describe the process in a second. In the preparation, the participation, deliberation, suggestion, recommendations. And one other thing, even in the straw polls, non-voting liaisons will be participating. In the rating that we will do early on, they will be participating. There'll be rating numbers. They will also be part of the straw polling. But when it comes to a final vote, to take a person from stage 1 to stage 2 or stage 2 to stage 3, that voting will be done by the voting members, which is typical of what happens also on the board. So that's what's happened. And I want to emphasize this because there's a lot of conversation going on about whether or not the NOMCOM this year is changing its rules and trying to disenfranchise maybe liaisons or not. If you haven't heard it, I'm glad that you're hearing from me at least. That's not the case. Yesterday, I stood up at the public forum, and I made a statement on behalf of the NOMCOM as chair saying that we actually are recommending, and we did recommend, to the board that they change their bylaws and make sure that RSAC and SSAC liaisons are not term unlimited non-voting, but term limited voting members moving forward. We'd like that bylaw changed so we can implement that, so that folks like Alejandro, who's doing an excellent job, can actually vote through the entire process. You may have questions, so I'm going to stop now and open it up. Thank you.
Thank you. Brad Verd, co-chair RSEC. Very interesting. It is in alignment with what Alejandro has shared with us. However, based upon your comment yesterday on the public forum, which I appreciate, I've heard lots of hallway conversation around this. So this is not the first time I've heard this. So I'm kind of, I have my interpretation of what used to be and what is today. And what I hear from other people has been wildly different. So I guess I'm kind of curious if you could just give me a scenario of what used to be and what is today, so that make sure I'm in alignment with the understanding.
So there has been a substantive change. Let's be clear on that. What used to happen was that everything through the process from the beginning to the end of the NOMCOM used to be considered sort of a fictional straw poll. Everything was a straw poll, which meant that when we went from 100 to 40, from a 40 to 20, from a 20 to 5, from a 5 to 1 elimination and selection of candidates effectively, so we're rejecting and selecting, that used to be done by what people used to describe as a straw poll. We looked really closely at that because we'd had a bit of a problem last year with people getting really annoyed at the situation, saying that's not a straw poll. And actually non-voting can actually determine the outcome. So what are we doing? Are we violating the bylaws or not? And there was a lot of discussion about this last year. This year, not me, but others raised that as an issue, some newcomers as well. They read the bylaws, and I'll let also, you know, others who had a different view and how their view has changed speak also to this. When you look at the bylaws, it says that basically you can participate, but you can't vote. And the definition of vote, if you look at it in the bylaws, is basically a determination. So we are following exactly the same process as the board, where liaisons to the board don't get to vote in a decision-making vote. We also had the advantage of asking, apart from the fact that there were a lot of lawyers in our NOMCOM, who had the same advice, but also asked the council. And the issue was, if it's a straw poll that you're taking, perfectly fine. Absolutely can. It's not outcome determinative. So absolutely non-voting liaisons can participate, and they're going to be doing that this year. But when it comes to eliminating someone, where they go from stage A to stage B, and they're gone then, they will not be part of moving forward. And that's a decision you're making regarding that candidate. That's basically a decision of the NOMCOM. And so that's the interpretation we've taken. Now, what does that mean in difference between last year and this year is that previously we used to consider just the final sort of formal action of the final vote that we called a vote. And everybody realized that was a fiction. It didn't make any sense because we are making decisions and we're eliminating people on the basis of the straw polls. And so the interpretation and the advice we've received is basically when you make a decision, not a straw poll, you are actually voting.
So let me just sort of give you a brief example of that. So for example, let's say you and the two gentlemen on either side of you are running for a board seat. The way it used to be done is that we had two slots available. We would have a poll to elect two of the top candidates out of the three, you and the two gentlemen on either side of you. The poll would select two people, eliminating one of you. That was deemed to be a poll. We called it a poll, but one person has been eliminated. It's really effectively a vote. Then what would happen is at the end of that polling process, we would have a slate of candidates for the board. That slate would be voted upon, and then the non-voting liaisons who participated in the poll would not participate in the vote. We didn't think, since that was essentially eliminating a candidate, that was in line with the bylaws.
So I've been on NOMCOM for 5 years. And when we discuss this, we need to be very careful not saying that the previous NOMCOMs have done something terribly wrong, while we think there is a need for change. So there has been other changes as well. My first year, the rhetoric through the whole process was that the NOMCOM could at any time go back and pick out candidates that they had previously eliminated. Now, when I was chair last year, that kind of non-determinism in the process didn't make sense to me because it wasn't necessarily driving us forward to reiterate discussions we've had in the past. So over the years, it had become more and more that you actually start with 100, you reduce it to a 40, you reduce it to 10, 20, and then you end up with one or two candidates, and you actually make decisions moving forward. That's why we're here. So it's been a change in the rhetoric. So when this came up at the end of last year, I actually went back and talked to Ram, who is on the board, to get two perspectives from him. How does the ICANN board do this? And he is a non-voting member of the board. So he said that, well, at some point, we do straw polls. And then when you sense the temperature of the room, there is a formal vote only by the voting members. But there is never a sort of vote-ish where the non-voting members take part. There is a straw poll first and then a vote. So that there is a clear distinction between straw polls and votes. And the practice in the NOMCOM had been to only have straw polls to make decisions. So that's a big change. And he also said that it was quite clear when he participated in the NOMCOM, he was not taking part in any of these votes. So there had been a significant change of practice in the way the NOMCOM had been working over the years, sort of letting go of this detail. And part of it that I will actually defend that previous NOMCOMs were okay to do this was since they allowed to pick up candidates again at any point in the process, which to me doesn't really make sense. If you want to have a streamlined process and reach a goal, you need to focus on the candidates that and move you forward, right? So that's part of this as well that makes it much more complicated than just looking at does the non-voting members participate in straw polls or not? The big distinction is making clear what's a vote, writing that in the operating procedures or the voting procedures that we're now making, that this decision is okay to participate in, this is not okay, and making that very clear. So nobody, and this is the important thing, nobody should come in the last day of the NOMCOM and say that, oh, but I don't agree with this because the only reason that candidate ends up here is because the non-voting members. That's the worst case that we want to avoid. And I think that Alejandro has really seen this, that, okay, it's not important for him to vote. It's very important for him to be able to voice his opinion. And if everybody knows that he's not voting, maybe they will actually listen more to him. I mean, that's my interpretation of that.
Hello.
So, thank you very much for that detail. I just wanted to ask Sahid, because I know some of the people were not in the public forum yesterday, and you made a comment which personally I think was very sane and very valid comment in the public session. If possible, could you please repeat that for the room so we are all on the
thank
same
you.
Page?
Thank you. The comment I made in the public forum is that we would recommend, as chair of the NOMCOM, not just as a personal thing, that we have a lot of challenges because of this distinction that exists in the bylaws. We would recommend that the SSEC and RSEC, and I didn't say non-voting liaisons because that means the GAC also gets included, because the GAC also then ends up having a vote. Imagine them being there and imagine how that politically affects everybody. So it's very specific. The SSEC and the RSEC should have term limits, which they currently don't, and should have full voting rights like everybody else. That's my recommendation to the board.
Thank you.
And we're going to be making that recommendation to the review team as well.
One minute. Alejandro and then Liman.
Okay, thank you. Well, I'm going to rephrase what HP said regarding I don't mind to vote or not to vote. But I just want to mention that when I entered NOMCOM almost 3 years ago, I was not expecting to vote or to poll. So for me, it was a surprise that in that moment, they allowed me to poll, not actually to vote. But if you, one more time, if you read the bylaws, it explicitly and very clear says that our SAC representatives are a non-voting member. So, in somehow, there are two lawyers there, Damon and Zahid. So I fully understand that they want to say what the bylaws mention.
I understand where you're coming from, Lars Lehmann, for the record. I understand where you're coming from with this proposal, but it gets us into the same conundrum that we had with the empowered community, since this advisory committee is formally appointed by the board. Mm-hmm. Have it vote on incoming board members creates a circle which is kind of complicated, at least. So please bear that in mind.
Well, as we had a private discussion on that, I would then suggest that you also propose to have a fully bottom-up appointment of the RSAC. I mean, RSAC, there are root server operators, and you should be fully capable of bottom-up appointing this council. So you don't need the board involved in that, and then you don't have a circular thing. There may be that may be different for SSAC, but let's fix that as well. I think that's the sort of my engineering approach to this.
We don't want to make changes to your thing here, but that would be the logical solution then, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, I've been collecting my questions. So a couple things. The example you used, you're more like the board now, and you used Rahm's example of straw polls happen on the board, but then when it comes down to voting, there's a vote, and the non-voting seats don't vote. Correct? That's what you just said to me. You also said outcome determinative, meaning the non-voting seats would not be involved in anything that was outcome determinative. So I'm going somewhere with this, which is based upon the hallway conversations that I've been in. Can you define to me outcome determinative? And the reason I ask that is, before you jump on, is I'm one of the conversations I was involved in, and I was really kind of dumbfounded by it, was stating that any conversation that our liaison was involved in where he was sharing his opinion, trying to influence the outcome of a candidate, which is what I believe his role is outcome determinative. So therefore, couldn't be involved. And I literally, I was kind of like speechless to it. And so I really would like to understand, when you say outcome determinative, what does that mean?
Okay. I'm sorry, I'm going to be very frank. I know this is open, it's probably transcribed, and there's a point at which you really just have to say things. We're having a serious problem with some folks getting out there and disseminating, and I'm saying it right now on record, disinformation. It is unfair. It is incorrect. I'm even going to go as far as to say it's deceptive. Sorry, I apologize, because we've been hearing this not just from you, from others.
This is why I'm asking.
I'm so glad you are.
So my answer to the people that I was having this conversation with was, I'm meeting with them tomorrow. I'm going to point blank ask the questions and try to understand it, because I disagreed with them point blank. That didn't make sense to me.
This is malicious.
So that's why I'm asking.
This is malicious, deceptive, rumor mongering. And I say that with full responsibility, not just because I'm upset, because I am upset as well.
thank you.
No, but thank you. Right.
I understand.
No, but let me answer your
question.
Right. So let me describe the process to you. Because, I mean, I had to do the same thing with the ESSAC also. And when they understood what the process looked like, I think they understood most of what was being discussed in the NOMCOM. So we have the following process. And I'm sorry, we're going to go over a little bit over time, but give me these 2 minutes because I think it's important. The first thing that happens is the application's closed, and every one of us gets our applications, and we look at them, and we have maintained the process where people online, all of us NOMCOM members online, will rate those applications. So everybody gives a 1, 2, 4, or 5.
Including the liaisons.
Everybody.
Everybody,
except the leadership team. We are totally excluded from this process. So Alejandro, as an example, or Mark Seiden, who's with the ESSAC, for example, will actually rate them 1 to 5. Those numbers will come up. Everybody will see those numbers. Everybody will know who voted how, basically rated them. We call it rating. Then what happens is there's a call, and we go through every single applicant, and we ask that, is there a proposer and seconder for every single applicant? In that process, because proposing and seconding can be outcome determinative, we have allowed the non-voting liaisons to suggest somebody. So they can say, hey, hold on, I suggest this person be looked at. They need to find one proposer and one seconder to take that person through the process. That's a very, very low bar. So the liaisons get to suggest. There's a proposer, there's a seconder. There's no vote, per se, but there's a proposer and seconder. And that person is effectively, there's an outcome determinative action where that person either goes forward or doesn't go forward. That will give us a large number, a very small number of people will be excluded from that process, right? Because if such a low bar, we're not going to exclude a lot of people. And that's deliberate, because we want the maximum number of reasonable applications to get to the intersessional face-to-face meeting. Because what we're changing this year is saying, we're not, for our own efficiency, going to start excluding people. We want to consider as many people as we can practically and give consideration to every single application as much as possible. So at the intersessional, here's what happens. We have a discussion regarding candidates. Everybody participates. And when I say everybody, including the non-voting liaisons. And then we have a straw poll. And in that straw poll, guess who participates? Non-voting liaisons. Everybody gets to see what's happening with every single candidate. And we go through the entire process, and once it's closed, then we do it again. And when we do it again, this time, again, non-voting liaisons get to discuss. And then when the vote happens to take one candidate to the next stage, whether I eliminate them or not, that's when the non-voting liaisons don't vote. But up until that entire process, they're fully participating in everything. And by the way, that cycle's repeated, of course, because we have to keep sort of reducing the numbers. And that's what it all looks like. For the sake of time, I'm not going to go into how many times we do this, but that's what we do. So just also, when the interviews take place, how the deep dive teams are set up, we have asked that they be part of the deep dive teams. We've asked that they provide reports to the NOMCOM. So they are members of the deep dive teams providing recommendations. So they're fully participating in every other process. It's only one thing that they don't do. When it comes to a vote on a candidate, elimination or not, that's when, first there'll be a straw poll, they'll participate. But when it comes to the vote of making a final decision, the fate of that candidate is in question. That's when they don't. That's it.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. That was my original interpretation and what I walked into the meeting with. One last, really just a comment, and this is my comment, my personal comment. I do find it interesting that the procedures are reset every year for non-com. And so I do kind of echo the SAC comment on that, that it's outsider looking in, I don't understand it. Maybe there's a reason for it, but it is confusing.
Well, if I'm going to be a bit blunt, I would say that that's not true. No, the bylaw says that the NOMCOM gets to set their own procedures. But every year in the 5 years I've been there, the NOMCOM has started with the existing procedures, gone through them and see where do we need to make improvements. So effectively, the NOMCOM has to approve its own procedures for the year, so they have the ability to change them. In practice, the changes have not been that big. There is a substantial change this year because of this clarification and this thing. But the procedures as such, if you go to the website and go back and see, you will see that 80% of the text is probably the same every year.
And again, I'm not trying to do a point counterpoint on what was changed or what hasn't changed. I'm just kind of sharing the confusion. And I think that though little changes happen over time, they lead to a big change like you just happened right now. So
can I just share my thoughts on that? My first initial reaction, having been on the NOMCOM a few years and knowing that we set our own procedures, was no, I think we should set our own procedures. It was an instinctive reaction. And then I suddenly, and this is a conversation I had with some folks in the SAC, I said, no, actually, you know what? That's good. If the community tells us what the rules are, we don't have to waste time trying to set our procedures. And we're done. It's okay. They've decided, and that's what we need to comply with, which is the same thing with the bylaws. The bylaws are written the way they're written. We have to just comply with them. We can't monkey around with them. So, for instance, just like we would say, well, let the non-voting liaisons vote, we can't tell the ALAC, for instance, which is a voting member, you're not voting this year. You know, you can't do the opposite.
I would just add to that, that yes, I can agree in principle with that, but please don't make it so that it takes 2.5 years to change something that's obviously wrong in the procedure, which is what we tend to get into in ICANN.
Our agility will be. I'm so sorry. Because this was important, we've gone 7 minutes over. Somebody else in the ALAC is waiting for us to make a presentation, probably with the same questions in mind, I imagine. But if you excuse us, and if there's anybody who wants to reach out for further questions, please feel free to do so. We want to be able to answer these questions.
Yeah. So thank you very much for coming. This was very informative. Actually, I'm very impressed with just the level of thoughtfulness that's going into your work and the integrity associated with it. You're asking some tough questions to ensure that you're living by the right rules. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
So now we go into our open work session. Brad will run that session. Thank you.
Andrew, can we get the work list up, please? There's room at the table for anybody who wants to come up.
You get power.
Yeah, you get power and a mic to talk to. Yes. Yeah. All right. So these are the existing work items that are currently being, what's the term, that have been identified at different caucus meetings at different ICANN meetings, or I should just say caucus meetings because it was caucus meetings at the ICANN meeting versus caucus meetings at the IETF. That were identified. So the process for these would be to collect these, wordsmith them to give a little bit of background where they're coming from, and then send them to the caucus to look for volunteers to create a statement of work is the wrong, is it? Yeah, a statement of work, kind of a problem statement that this is what we're going to go solve, and then there's a call for a work party to be created and to work on it. So I'll just quickly run through them, see if there are any comments. These are not wordsmithed, I should say. These are the raw suggestions. These will be wordsmithed, and what I mean by wordsmith is not to change the intent or the content, but to give background for the caucus when they get them. So the first one came up. There was a question on to research how resolvers choose which root server they're talking to. This came up at the last caucus meeting. I forget where it was, and it was brought up by I believe one of the current root operators. But this seems like a Question, Duane, you want to add something?
Well, I would say that, as far as I know, resolvers choosing servers, there's nothing special about the root. I mean, this is probably more general. How does a resolver choose the server for any zone? And I would assume it's the same for roots. If it's not, that would be interesting to know.
I got it. Andrew, can you make note of that just so when we do the, we can expand that question a bit to make sure that it's that it's covered?
So the question there is whether they follow the standard procedure that every DNS system uses, or they use a different one?
Well, there is no standard procedure. It's implementation dependent. So I think it's understanding how the different implementations choose, make their choices.
Yeah, I believe that each of the software known software companies out there do it a little differently.
I was under the impression that there was an expectation, though, that they would pick among the available servers at random, and if that didn't work, pick another one.
I believe that it needs to be answered, and it sounds like you're be a good member for the work party. Yes, you've been added to the work party. Kidding. All right. Any other questions around that? No. The second one that had been talked about was research what a rogue operator could do, and I believe that's a rogue root operator. This one is to identify kind of what malicious behavior could be done, and more specifically, what are safeguards, gates, mitigations that could be put in place to prevent that, or identify it immediately. Fred?
I think your additional comment there needs to be added in that. Well, you just said, and so what do we do? How do we identify?
Yeah, so Andrew, I hope you're grabbing that. But yes, I agree with that. Risks and mitigations. Any further discussion? No? Okay. The third one here is research geographic diversity of root servers. This was a discussion about underserved areas and how do you identify underserved areas. Some of us have talked internally, and this is a complex question. It's not really a complex problem. It's just a complex question because there are so many variables for each given region and or area. There is geographic questions. There is topology questions. There are latency. There are the list goes on and on and on. And I believe that maybe what this turns into is identifying what those questions are giving more color and background around it so people can understand the problem set versus saying this region is underserved. Maybe it's not underserved because the network topology doesn't allow for it. You know, if this region, if all circuits go to point X, maybe we need root servers in point X and not in this region. There's a whole bunch of different questions there. Yes.
Yeah, I think I brought this one up. This would be a problem two ways. If you looked at it too simply, it's a horrible question. If you look at it in too complicated a way, it'd never get done. And so we don't collude very often in things like where we put the next server, but it is not obvious if you just put pins on a map what is underserved. Because almost every time you find a big geographic area, there's a very good explanation for how that's not actually underserved. There are issues of, like you said, latency, bandwidth, and every other thing, and even politics. So we could, I was imagining after we talked about this, we could end up with a prescription of, hey, somebody ought to put a server in Kazakhstan or some place that it wasn't obvious to us individually that is underserved. But in total, we could come up with a recommendation.
I think that's great feedback. Any other comments around that? Question? Please.
Go ahead. Hello, everyone. My name is Zoe Filomeno. I'm a United Nations Youth Representative under Peace Day 365. I have been working with a couple of NGOs when it comes down to internet in impoverished areas around the world. And I am really impressed that you guys touched on this topic when it comes to servers. I'm just here to learn from you guys. So thank you.
Thank you for your work on that effort.
Yes, thank you.
So I had something to add to this. In one of the other primer DNS meetings, that question got asked, and somebody was like, well, how many are in Africa? And it really doesn't give the proper answer to the question that they want to ask, is how well served are they?
Correct.
And I think that we probably need to come up with some way of identifying how well served a region is so that you can't just say, you know, you have 10 of this, 15 of that. So I do think this is good work. And especially in, you know, like South America and Africa, where a lot of the country's connectivity goes out of region, they may be perfectly well served from, say, Miami and South America. But, you know, if you just do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, it doesn't, you know.
Andrew, did you capture that? How well served versus, yeah, great. All right, moving on.
One sec, Brad. It is worth noting that actually Ripe Atlas has a lot of data that we can actually start with.
We can leverage.
Yeah.
Moving on, fourth bullet point is best current practices for hosting root instances. I believe this question came up around the physical requirements, space, power, ping. So physical network, what are the power, you know, restrictions type of things for hosting these different nodes? Right now, that is currently defined by each of the individual root operators as they deploy their Anycast clouds. And the question here was, is this something that RSAC caucus should be looking at and kind of defining a best practice? Any comments, thoughts?
Yeah, I got a question. Does this include the amount of root servers that are co-located on the same instance location or under the same host?
I think it could. I think that's a, you know, that is a shared fate question that has come up quite a bit. I don't know if this was here to specifically address this. I think it came up because it was a reoccurring question in the caucus meetings. It was asked yesterday in the tutorial session, which is, you know, what are the requirements for me hosting one, right? And so this was this is a bit of. Maybe this isn't a place RSAC should go, but it was suggested, so I wanted to cover it here.
Brad, if you literally meant rack power wires kind of thing, what we find people are most surprised by is the routing requirements of advertising, and that documenting that would be really a great big step because they people think we're shutting them down by saying there's this hard part, and it's not written anywhere. You just have to be a member of the smart club.
Lima, and then Wes?
Let's try to work on this together. And if it turns out that there are two big diversities and variations and we can't agree, maybe a subgroup of us could get together and publish something under another umbrella. Because I fully agree that there are probably common things there and definitely things that are sometimes difficult to explain and it's where we meet networking difficulties as well. So sign me up.
Wes?
In our efforts to do the root server, how the root server system works tutorial, it might be worth saying when we have, you know, the slide that says you should have three or four for a region, we probably ought to talk about not all in the same rack, speaking of.
Certainly, and again, when I say space, power, ping, I'm not saying that this is limited to this is the cable, right? This is everything involved in getting that cable to work for that instance, which I include the routing and whatnot. So, I mean, I think if that's going to convey to the community that, you know, this is the bar, I think that's important and maybe something that RSAC should definitely look at. All right, sorry. My screen and I can't see. All right, bullet number five, tool to gather local perspective on root servers. I think this was suggested again, going, I think some of these kind of overlap and touch on each other. This certainly could be something for, you know, an underserved region or somebody who's questioning whether or not they're underserved. Like, is there, you know, maybe there's something that could be developed that is a tool that you could launch and say, you know, how well am I served right now, where I'm at, type of thing. And like, oh, look, you've got, you know, X milliseconds to 12 different servers or different instances, and here they are and whatnot. Kind of just a tool. Any thoughts? Would that be useful, something for RSAC? I see lots of heads nodding. So, all right. And then obviously we have, we published RSAC 28, which was the naming scheme study. And out of that, we basically ended the document with, we need to do more work to really come down to a bunch of answers. And here are three of the work items. One of them is study the current behavior of DNS resolvers, which we kind of touched on a little bit earlier. Yes,
I think, Dwayne? If I remember correctly, the actual question from this was, study the current behavior of resolvers in the face of signed primary responses, and do they validate those signed primary responses and that sort of thing.
So. Yeah, that's important to know. It's just, so the... the recommendations from RSEC 28 are well documented. I'm not trying to change them here. This is trying to get it on one slide. So we'll go back and make sure that they are in alignment. There was a clear question about a study about node redelegation attacks and how that was maybe the stipulation for changing the naming scheme. So I think the takeaway was we really need to look at the node redelegation attacks and make sure that that we had the right motivations there. And then lastly, there was the study looking into how do we reduce the priming response size given the DNSSEC and the size of that question seems to get larger and larger with the different things that we were looking at. Is there anything else that we should add to this list? Again, so this is, we will pretty these up, and when I say pretty them up, we will give some background and color and context, just like I did here verbally, and this will get sent out to the caucus for people to identify which ones they want to work on and try to come up with a statement of work for each one. And then if it gains traction within the caucus, we'll do a call for a work party and begin work on that. Any suggestions? Anything that we're missing?
Can I just get clarification on how we define rogue in the second bullet? Who came up with that question? I can look at that from either, you know, there's some entity out there that wants to turn up an alternate route or, you know, complementary route to what we're doing and try to suck traffic, or there's, you know, Maurizio and I have a bad day and right. We take down, you know, all of ICANN's root servers.
So I think, if I may, I think the answer is both. Okay. Right, so like, I mean, that's a good scenario basically of somebody trying to announce your IP space and doing something that they shouldn't do. That is a scenario that we should talk about, because that is a rogue operator. It's just not the current operator going rogue. It's somebody trying to hijack your space and do something malicious. Jeff, you're
gonna... Yeah, there was a mention in the Russian press this last week on what if ICANN dropped RU from the zone file, and they ran through the whole scenario. It's, you know, so it's out there. The idea is out there of, you know, do you manipulate this thing? You got to admit it's an interesting question.
It started with you know, a current operator going rogue and doing something, because that's been a long time question that has been addressed through at the root operator level a number of different times. So we think it's important here that we kind of document through what the different scenarios are, and again, more importantly, how we identify them and mitigate them.
Okay.
All right. Are there comments in the? I'm not in. So John Bond has said, in reference to the best current practice doc, doesn't need to be said that. Said at the mic, but captured, please.
Just said first
Oh, I can't. I'm sorry. I didn't scroll back far enough. So again, reading John's comment, he goes, I think this document could be useful. However, it may give some people, organizations, the erroneous perception that if they meet these current best practices, they will be entitled to host a server on behalf of any root server operator. He's going back to the fourth bullet, which is best current practices for hosting root instances. Obviously this is a generic statement that we would be making, kind of a informative maybe, versus, you know, you do these and you get it, right? That is currently at the discretion of the root operators, and each root operator has their own evaluation and criteria that somebody would need to meet. We're not trying to take that over at all. Thank you, John. Oh, he's typing something else. Oh, all right. Anything else? All right, so that's the current work item. We will we have that as an action item. This will be coming out to the caucus mailing list in the very near future. Tripti, do you have anything else? All right, so we are 4 minutes ahead of schedule, correct? Oh, okay. So we're a little ahead of schedule. If there's nothing else, we'll adjourn. All right, thank you all. Oh, wait, Jeff? We have this room until noon. I don't know if somebody else has the room. No. So, all right. Thank you all.
We are adjourned.
I'm asking the RSAC to stay here. We never got to that one item from the previous meeting. Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, never mind. No. Okay.
Basically, from now on until 1:30, we don't have this room. Let's make it simple.